You're listening to the podcast of Williamsburg Christian Church, a community of faith joining God's pursuit of restoring lives. We hope you enjoy this week's podcast. Joshua was a leader in the people of God. Let's read this text together. We're coming to the end of the journey. Joshua 14, verse 6. The descendants of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Kenizzite said to him, all right, so real quick. Joshua and Caleb were like the duo. They were like the Batman and Robin of the Hebrew people. Well, Moses was probably more like the Batman. I don't know. That's not a good. Okay, so Moses is Captain America. I don't know who's the leader of the Avengers anymore. Infinity War is throwing me all off whack. So forget that analogy. Just know this. Joshua and Caleb were the two apprentice leaders that Moses raised up who were leading the people of God. I probably should have stuck with that, Aaron. All right, so Caleb comes to Joshua. They're all coming to the end of the journey. And Caleb says, listen to what he says. He says to Joshua, you know what the Lord promised Moses, the man of God at Kadesh Barnea, about you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the Lord's servant, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to scout the land and brought back an honest report. So let me pause you. So what's happening is Caleb's recounting the story where they get to Kadesh Barnea, and it was an 11-day journey between Kadesh Barnea and Canaan and the land of promise. There was only an 11-day journey that stood between them and receiving the land that God had made a promise about. So they send out scouts to run a covert sort of surveillance, and Joshua and Caleb were two of the 12 that were sent out, the 12 spies. And they go out, and they come back, and 10 of the 12 spies report, and Joshua and Caleb admits that the Canaanites are huge people. They're like Texans. Everything's bigger in Canaan, right? It's huge. They're huge. Everything about the place is huge. It's sweet. It's like a land flowing milk and honey. It's going to be good. It's a great place. God has made a promise, and this is a great place, but there's no way we can overtake them. That was the report that came back to the Israelites. Big old congregation of people, 12 people come back and say, I know God made a promise, but if we go there, we're going to get destroyed. But Joshua and Caleb, they come back and say, they're right, they are huge, but that's just it. God made a promise. And if he made a promise, he'll keep a promise. We can take the land. Moses and Aaron are persuaded by Joshua and Caleb and said, yes, God made a promise, we can take the land. But the majority, say majority, the majority of the people were moved by fear, were moved by being scared. Anybody know how it worked out? They turned an 11-day journey into a 40-year wandering. Now, I could sidestep this and talk about how the majority is not always right. Congregational voting happened there, and it didn't go well. Joshua's reliving this with Caleb and Caleb with Joshua. So he says, I was 40 years old when Moses, the Lord's servant, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to scout the land, and I brought back an honest report. My brothers who went with me caused the people's heart to melt with fear, but, read this with me, I remain loyal to the Lord my God. I remain in my conviction. I had faith. Loyalty. On that day, Moses promised me, because I remain loyal, the land where you have set foot will be an inheritance for you and your descendants forever, because you have remained loyal to the Lord my God. As you see, the Lord has kept me alive these 45 years, as he promised, since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel was journeying in the wilderness. Here I am today. How old is he? 85 years old. Listen, this is my favorite. I am still as strong today as I was the day Moses sent me out. My strength for battle and for daily tasks is now as it was then. Now give me this hill country the Lord promised me on that day, because you heard then that the Anakim are there as well as fortified cities. Perhaps, I love this humility, right? This isn't all confidence. Perhaps the Lord will be with me and I'll drive them out as the Lord promised. Then Joshua blessed Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and gave him Hebron as an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron belongs to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, as an inheritance to this day, because he remained loyal to the Lord, the God of Israel, because he remained loyal. Hebron's name used Hebron's name used to be that. Arba was the greatest man among Anakim. After this, the land rested from war. I love this story. Caleb's 85 years old. So anyone 85, this is for you, right? Like, this is for all of us. Caleb comes to him and says, man, I was a young man. I was in my prime when Moses called us. That was 45 years ago, and I'm just as strong today as I was then. Caleb looks at Joshua and says, God made a promise. There's a battle that has to be fought. I don't know if the Lord will deliver me from the battle or not. Perhaps he will, perhaps he won't. But this I know, I'm not done yet. I'm not done until my life is done. That's what Caleb is saying. He said, I'm not done. Yeah, I know I'm older, and I know it's been years, and I know I don't, maybe you may think I don't walk as straight as I used to, but I'm not done until my life is done. And so I'll fight this battle. I don't know if I'll win. I don't know what the Lord will do, but I know the Lord made a promise, and I know that until I'm 6 feet under, I'm not done. People may look at me and say, oh, he's 85, he's done. I'm not done until my life is done. I don't know what the Lord will do, but I know I'm not done. And I love this story. Like, I've been thinking about this story the last week and a half, and how Caleb could have checked out. Like, he could have said, look, I did my job. I tried to convince the congregation of Israel that God had made a promise, but they were too wrecked by fear. And too scared to go the way that God wanted him to go, and you promised me, God promised me this land. And Caleb could have said, so, you know, Joshua, I'd like for you to appoint 40 young men, right? Like appoint 40 young men, and I really like that other young man over there. I want him to be the captain or the general, and I want you to send them out and go take the land so I can move myself in there. That's not what Caleb does. Caleb says, I'm not done. Send me. Send me. How many of you have felt done? I mean, how many times you just felt done? I'm done. You were discouraged, right? Like maybe you found yourself in the situation like the Canaanite, like the Israelites did, and you saw the circumstances, and you peeked over the hill, and everything about what you saw looked impossible. Everything looked bigger than you. The problem is bigger than you. Everybody around you tells you the problem is bigger than you. And you're just done. How many of you felt done? Where you were the minority. Come on now. Where you saw something and it didn't seem like anybody else saw it. And you're just done. Just like the congregation of Israel, they don't want to see it. They just want to hold on to other things that at the end of the day are going to be swept away in glory, and yet are willing to hold on to it or pursue it despite the fact that it could be the death of some, not the death of themselves. And you're the minority voice, and you don't feel like you're being heard, and so you're just done. And think of Caleb. Think of Caleb. Everybody else tells you to stop. Everybody else tells you to done. You think of Caleb and you say, I'm not done yet. I'm not done until my life is done. Here's the thing. Search the Scriptures. Has God made promises in the Scriptures? And if He's made promises, have you searched them and found out that God could possibly be all over what it is? God's more all over what you're pushing, what you're pursuing, what you're holding to, than maybe the circumstances or than others. That God's clear over here. He's not as clear over here, but He's clear over here. And you're the minority. Or maybe you look at the circumstances and it's just too big. It's just too big a deal. It's just not possible. And everybody else is saying, you're done. You need to say, I'm not done yet. If God's made promises, I'm not done yet. I'm not done until my life is done. When my life is done, when I'm 6 feet under, then we'll call it a day. Until then, I'm not done. And you may have to take the position of Caleb. You may have to say, perhaps the Lord will win. I mean, perhaps he'll give me, perhaps I'm right. I don't, perhaps it'll happen the way I think it'll happen. Maybe it won't. But this I know. I'm not done until my life is done. See, God never has a crisis of faith. He has a crisis of us. God's not surprised. He's not wondering what's going on. He doesn't peek over the mountain and see the obstacles and the difficulties and go, "Whoa, I didn't anticipate that." He knows what's there. And he's promised to be with you. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And the thing is, when it comes time to be done, because there are times, I think, where we have to be done. Here's what I've learned. When you're done, you're going to know that you know that you know that you know you're done. Do you hear that? You're not going to wonder about it. You're not going to question it. You're going to know that you know that you know that you know you're done. There's not going to be any consideration of possibilities. There is going to be a peace that surpasses understanding, and you're going to know that you know that you know that you're done. But if you say you're done out of fear, it's not that you're not done until your life is done. If you say that you're done out of what could be the backlash, no, you're not done until your life is done. If you say that you're done because it seems like you may lose your life, lose your heart, lose your emotions, lose your friendships, lose your place, lose your job, lose, then that's not it. That's not the time to say that I'm done. You're not done until your life is done. If you know that you know that you know that you know that you're done, then be done and move on. Because actually, that's God's way of saying you're not done. You're just moving on. So if you wonder, there's this thing you're walking through and you go, "But how do I know? How do I know?" You're going to know that you know that you know that you know that you're done. You're going to know. God knows, and he's going to let you know when it's done. Until then, he's in the business of giving dead things life. That includes you. Press on. You're not done until your life is done. And what I love about this story is that it pushes back against society's tendencies to think that just because we're too old, we're done. You're not done until your life is done. And there may be some things that you're just over. Right? Like you may say, "I'm over it." And you're over it because you've grown cynical, or because you've grown apathetic, or because you've just resigned yourself to be over. "I'm over it." The moment you're over it, you may actually be under it, and that's not a good place to be. Just because you're tired and exhausted is not the same as being done. Everybody gets tired and exhausted. Lynn's going to be tired and exhausted. She can't look at baby and be like, "I'm done. Figure it out." I know, right? It's like, "Wah." You know, what do you do with that? You go in, right? Like, it's so cute. You're not done. Just be honest. Be honest with yourself, right? It's kind of like when I'm teaching a 3E training lab, I always have people say, "Well, when are we enabling people?" It's always the question people want to ask is, "When are we enabling? When are we enabling? When are we enabling? When are we enabling?" Here's my answer. If you start using the word enabling because what you really mean is, "I'm frustrated, tired, or exhausted, or irritated, or aggravated at the fact that I think this person is fill in the blank," that's not enabling. That's just you being frustrated. Sometimes the word enabling is a pretty word that lets us off the hook when we're really just frustrated at what we perceive to be as lazy or whatever behavior. That's just an excuse. Let's call it what it is. It's not enabling. It's an excuse to let yourself off the hook. Just say you quit and call it a day and save everybody else some problems. Or just use the right language. Sometimes we say we're done. Sometimes we say we're over it, when what we really mean is we're tired. We just call it tired. Because there's a word for that Jesus said. "All you who are weary and" what? "Heavy laden, come. come to me and I'll give you rest. Just say you're tired. Don't say you're done. You're not done until your life is done. What I sometimes wonder in my own life is I have found that I have used language that wasn't really what I meant in my heart. I just tried to find language that ultimately let me off the hook, that gave me an out, because there was nothing more that I wanted than an out. But that's not it. You're not done. What I've come to believe is that something needs to matter more to us, to me, than my own life. And there's nothing in American society that values that as a culture. Everything in our society leads us to a place of self-fulfillment. My is one of our favorite pronouns. And I've come to believe that something needs to matter more than our life. Something needs to matter more than self-interest, than self-fulfillment. Because self-fulfillment is a disordered love. Self-fulfillment is a disordered love. It's a love that organizes all pursuits around what I want and the way I want it. And when we organize our life around the things that I want, when I organize my life around my rights, my agenda, my preservation, my security, then anything that comes in the way of that is perceived as a threat. And what do with threats? You eliminate them. And that can sometimes lead me to just say, I'm done. I tried to be a peacemaker. I'm done. I'm done with y'all. I'm done with this. I'm done with that. And then that gets us twisted up inside. We get twisted up inside, emotionally, cognitively, spiritually. We get twisted on the outside with our relationships, our habits, and pursuits. And we start pursuing things that aren't even life-giving. We think they are because they're self-fulfilling, but they're not really self-fulfilling. They're just what the Bible might call a sin. And I know that sin is kind of a weird religious word, and I think we sometimes miss it. So when you take an elementary definition of sin, it means miss the mark. That is the simple, most basic elementary definition of sin. But when you do the other thing, and that's read the Bible through the narrative and how sin is talked about in the narrative of the Bible, you find out that sin is not just missing the mark. It's a failure to love neighbor and to love God. It is a failure to love your neighbor and to love God. That's what sin is. Sin is failure at loving. Did you know that? Like, that's what it is, man. We're going to talk about this in the theology school in depth. We're going to talk about the three bad words of the Bible: iniquity, transgression, and sin. All three words, two of them in which we don't use. Iniquity literally means crooked behavior. Transgression literally means a violation of trust. That's what transgression means. Sin means a failure at being moral. And in the biblical tradition, morality is hanging on loving God and loving neighbor. And what I find is that this idea that when we're done, because we have self-fulfilling pursuits, we find ourselves posturing toward crooked behaviors, our violation of trust between relationships, or just at a failure to love God and love others. And that is what the Bible would call sin, transgression, or iniquity. And that is what we needed rescue from. And I'm so glad that God didn't look at us and say, you know what, I'm done. He did say, I'm done. But he said it at his last words on a cross. The thing is this life, contrary to American ideology, this life isn't about me and you. It just involves me and you. Our life as Christians is to be joined in God's pursuit of restoring other lives, because we have come to believe that ours is being restored. We're to follow Jesus. We keep looking at Him. When we're with Him, we find that we can't pursue self-fulfillment. You can't be filled with the Spirit and filled with your desires all at the same time. That leads to a disordered love. filled with the Spirit leads to maybe reordered desires, which leads to a life of flourishing with Jesus. That's a different thing. So I wanted to give some basic encouragement here. Number one, don't retire from your Christian vocation. You can retire from your profession, but don't retire from your Christian vocation. If you're 85, you need to look at one of the elders or come to me and say, I'm not done. If you put in the years and put in the work, you're not done until your life is done. So don't retire from your Christian vocation. Don't retire from loving your neighbor as you love yourself. Don't retire from sharing your goods with the poor. Don't retire from growing in your faith. Don't retire from learning more about the Bible. Don't retire from your Christian vocation. Just retire from your profession, but not your Christian vocation. Don't do it alone. Don't go at this life alone. There's no way to go at this life alone. Get godly counsel. If you're struggling to decide whether or not you should be done, then do what the Scriptures say. Get godly counsel. And by godly counsel, I mean people who are spiritually mature, not people who you like who are Christians. That may not be the spiritually mature ones. Find a Christian that is spiritually mature and seek their advice. That's what the Bible says. People who love you and know you. And then make sure that that counsel is affirmed by the Scriptures. If it's not affirmed by the Scriptures, you need to do something with that counsel. And know this, that whatever you get, whatever words you get, it's got to look like the kind of thing Jesus said and did. If it doesn't look like Jesus, what Jesus said and did, then it's probably not reading well. And then separate yourself from your affinity groups. I want to talk about this for a minute. Stop just gathering people around you who just look like you and people you actually would like to hang out with. I mean, let's be honest. The beauty of a larger church is that we're thrust into life with people we'd rather not be with. Like the 12 apostles. I'm sure Matthew wasn't longing to go watch a movie with Simon the Zealot, especially a dark movie in a theater that was empty. Because Simon the Zealot would have had something to do to Matthew if it would have been just right. I'm sure Nathaniel, who was probably more of a wealthy guy, wasn't so keen on hanging out with Peter, the loud blue-collar fisherman guy. And yet God told all 12 of them to follow him and be in community for 3 years. We have a hard time being in community with people we don't like for 3 hours. But if we want to grow and not be done until our life is done, we need to be surrounded by people that may not be like us. That people we disagree with. Why are we so afraid to be with people we disagree with? Why are we so afraid to have conversations that are hard and disagreeable conversations? Because we're hypersensitive and we're done with that. That's why. We're done. Heard it all. We're done. Not done. Not done. You might have to take a break. That conversation's not over. Conversation's not over. When I have walked out of a room, when I have done the most embarrassing things of my life, I was done, but I realize I'm not done. I might need to breathe. I might need to take a break. But you're not done until your life is done, especially if God says it matters. And your life matters. And your role in God's world matters. You're not done until your life is done. Last thing is, it doesn't matter how much time you feel you've wasted. I know that some of us have lived hard lives. I know that some of us have spent our adult years doing this or doing that. I know that we have members in our church family who came to life in their who came to Christ in their 50s. Those 50 years, you didn't waste time. God doesn't talk in terms of wasting time. God talks in terms of redeeming time. There is nothing and no life and no minute, no moment, no month that God can't redeem for the good and the glory, the good of others and the glory of God. Like you can't say that I'm 85 or that I'm 82 or that I'm 45 or that I'm 22 or that I'm 17 or that I'm 15 and think that somehow you're going to be able to waste your life. The only way to waste our lives is if we quit, if we say that we're done. You are more than the worst thing you've ever done. You haven't wasted your life. You're not done. You're not done. You're not done until your life is done. Now, I just wanted to share this with you. That's all. There's no climactic end. I wanted to share this with you because we live in a society that I feel like fights the wrong battles all the time. And it's usually because we're done with the right things. We're done trying to change. We felt that way all our years and all our life. Or I did this for 50 years of my life, and Jesus comes and says, yeah, that's not it. And so we're done with moving forward. And it's sad, too, because we find that our society is experiencing suicide on levels that we haven't matched since we've been keeping score. And there's many reasons for that, perhaps. Many, many reasons. What I want to say to us is that because Jesus is Lord, we're not done. Not done until our life is done. And the Lord will let us know when our lives are done. We won't have any power over that. And so in the meantime, we come to the table, we come to the bread, we come to the cup, remembering that God isn't done with us yet. If you're here, which is a weird thing to say because, you know, you're here, God isn't done with you. You may feel done, but you're not done. You're not done until your life is done. And God will let you know when that is. And so in the meantime, whatever it is, whatever circumstance, whatever group of people, whatever ideology, whatever belief internal about oneself or about others, whatever it is that is telling you you're done, even if something in your life ended and you think the ending of that something has made you and you are done, you're done because this is over, I am telling you, you are not done until your life is done. Come to the bread and come to the cup. Come to the table. Receive the body and the blood of Jesus. And remember that as long as we partake of this, that means Jesus hadn't returned yet. Because we do this until he comes back. And what Paul said in Philippians chapter 1, verse 6, is that I know that God will complete in you what he has begun. He will complete it. Come and know that you are not done because God is not done with you.